Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Casterbras. My name is Christian Corley. He's James McLean, and we're here to chew the fat of recent things that have popped up in the world of Doctor Who and beyond. I noticed, James, that the King and Queen consort of the United Kingdom, Great Britain and Commonwealth emerged from a TARDIS at the Commonwealth Games. And you'd also seen this, I think, but you'd seen some other people. Chris Hoy, I think you said? And Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah, they did a trailer for the Commonwealth, which was actually pretty poor. It's so far as, I mean, the trailer itself was nice and twee and whatever, but it was on Instagram. I saw it. It was late at night, but I didn't know what was going on. I just, and it didn't. It just said Destination Glasgow 2026. You can find it on Instagram. It's quite a nice little trailer. It's about 3 minutes. It's quite long. Basically, Chris Hoy and Greg McHugh find a police box, and they have to go and get their majesties to the Commonwealth Games, I think, is the idea. But it wasn't very clear. So I watched this whole trailer. I thought, okay, it's quite nice. You have they use the 13th, the recent police box, and they take it and go on a travel, and a befuddled Sylvester McCoy, Seventh Doctor, appears looking for his TARDIS. And then, as you say, the last bit of the trailer has them at the games, coming out to the audience with the King and the Queen. Yeah, it's kind of fun. And I think maybe what I took from this was again an acknowledgement that Doctor Who isn't dead in terms of the BBC's perspective. I also noticed, I don't know if you've seen recently, and there's been some sort of conversations about it, the sort of tactical deployment of the Ramesh Ranganathan, what has the BBC done for us promo, which the BBC have done, where again, Daleks and TARDIS pop up in that as well. So I think these are the sort of things, if we're talking about Doctor Who, kind of acknowledge that the BBC is very keen to keep Doctor Who in its front and fore vision for its future.
The Ramesh thing's interesting. 1985, there's some of the reporting around this absolutely skewed as well, because in people are saying some of the reports are saying that it's based on the John Cleese one, but the John Cleese one in 1985 is actually they're saying it's based on the Life of Brian scene where John Cleese plays the Centurion. Not the Centurion, the Revolutionary, say what the Romans have done for us. It's based on that.
Yeah.
But John Cleese, it's actually based on the John Cleese advert, which is based on that, which the BBC did with John Cleese in 1985, which starts off similarly in a pub. I think he's being served by, I think it's Michael Horden. And then he starts off into a rant. So it's actually based on that rather than the Monty Python thing. And also, John Cleese has been John Cleese about it. So anyway, the interesting thing about the Commonwealth thing is I've just spotted a thing on social media that someone's posted, and this is this is absolutely good observation. It's post 1989. Doctor Who is cancelled. Sylvester McCoy continues to play the Doctor regardless. It's post 2025. Doctor Who is cancelled. Sylvester McCoy continues to play the Doctor regardless.
I saw someone say in their headcanon that they saw this as being post the Billy Piper regeneration, which transforms into Sylvester McCoy. And this is a continuation of the series, which is, again, is a cute little nod to Doctor Who. And again, I think it's quite significant if we're talking about concerns about whether the BBC is burying Doctor Who as it did, as you say, in 1989. It doesn't, we're not getting those same sort of vibes as you got in 1989. This is, as I think everyone has said, its way of moving forward, albeit slow.
Yes. Everything's going out to tender. That's the other thing. So Casualty's already gone. I understand Strictly Come Dancing has also gone. And the end result of this is that the BBC is only going to be producing a small amount of stuff itself, and everything else goes out to production companies, and which might well include BBC Studios, which is not part of the BBC. It's been separated from the BBC, but it's called BBC Studios, etc. So, I mean, I think it's too early to say, really, which way it's going to go at this stage. But BBC Studios certainly seem to be pushing for this. So, it could well end up with BBC Studios, which is, I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think BBC Studios have been heavily involved with producing Doctor Who previously in the Chibnall era.
I think it would be I don't know. I to be honest, I don't know. I think that's
I mean, it's no, and that's it. I mean, because it's interesting, and it'll be exciting and interesting to find out what happens and how it develops and what goes on from that. And also, I suppose as well, this is kind of new territory for all Doctor Who fans, because we're actually, I know we've seen it with Disney, but this is the first time it's actually happened like this, and there appears to be, it was put out into a similar process in the 90s, but this is the first time this has happened, and it's formalized and it's publicly done, because really no one knew what was going on in the 90s. That was all behind closed doors and a few lines in DWM before people started talking about that guy driving around in his car claiming to be Doctor Who.
Well, I think there is a difference because I got the impression, I mean, as we know, by 89 there was a sort of political sense or that Doctor Who was kind of needed to be put aside for
Well, there was
thinking
a
about
lot
new
going on, wasn't
shows.
there?
Yes, it had fallen out of favor with the BBC. Its ratings, well, I mean, even its, I don't, again, its ratings were constantly against Coronation Street, which was the biggest thing running at the time. But yeah, there was a sense, but this doesn't feel like this. This feels like, well, I mean, as has been said, the idea of it going to tender was as early as the back end of the last series, so that was in the run, in the works. So it feels like this is a movement of business than it is of I'm not even entirely sure it's about concerns about how it's faring. I get the sense maybe this, as he was saying, everything's going out of tender. It could very well be that Bad Wolf was moving in different directions now for whatever reason. And if that was the case, this would be the process it would go under. So.
Or, because we don't know, and there are things that point in this direction, they were told that they wouldn't be bidding, or they wouldn't be entertaining a bid from Bad Wolf for whatever reason. The reason I say this is because obviously I don't know. Hang on the ratings. Rather, looking at the recent DWM, which hasn't even got a goodbye message from RTD. It's all very. It has all been really very sudden, and that suddenness, I think, probably says quite a bit.
It'll be fascinating whether, say, like in 10, 15 years, if we're able to, if our robot overlords allow us to, or our billionaire controllers of our new feudal society world, which we all live in, allow us to look back and actually find out what happened in this period. Because it is interesting. Because I mean, there's also the fact that, well, the fact there was a clear suggestion that there was a hope or an expectation that Disney might have actually continued their connection to Doctor Who, which didn't transpire. So, where on these lines did things change? There certainly feels like there's been a change in the narrative over the year. Over the past year and year and a half, no, just over a year, isn't it? So yeah, it is hard, but regardless of whatever reason they finish with Bad Wolf, this would be the process that they would have go under at this point of time. So again, I think it's that whole point of like from the BBC's perspective, any disfavor with Doctor Who, by your argument, which I'm not disagreeing with, would be a disfavor with Bad Wolf rather than a disfavor with the idea of this being a project or product that suits their brand.
We mentioned Sylvester McCoy a few months ago as the Doctor. I mean, it would be. I mean, he's 80 plus, isn't he now? So that's not going to happen. But wouldn't it be absolutely glorious If they did, maybe like a series of one-offs over the course of a year, with each one starring a former doctor.
I still think, and we've said this now weeks and weeks, I still think this is the route the show should be taking. It should be doing small, disconnected event TV. So things like, six, or even a short. It could even be like, it could even be to the web. It could be just for iPlayer only. Could be like six episodes, 6 10-minute episodes. That could be fun, that works around, someone like the Seventh Doctor. Or it could be, it could be longer. It could be, obviously, they're doing their children's animated. It could be they do a movie and they do a movie. And the one thing I think which has been quite good for the show that's come out of both the Chibnall and Davis era is this comfort in reusing old doctors at the age they're at without having to explain it. And I think that really works while they're still about. You can just go, right, fine, we're doing, because interesting, the fans who you think would find that the hardest are the ones who seem to have actually embraced it. So the more conservative, small C traditional fans, sort of
Hello.
the middle age, they would, they're the ones who you think would balk at the sort of lack of continuity, but they're the ones with the I can't remember what it was called now, Destination Dalek or whatever it was, the
Dalek.
spin Dalek, the spin-off with Peter Davison on the DVD, with Janet Fielding and Mark Strickson. That there was, there's no continuity to it, but fans seem to love it. They didn't care. And I think that opens the door to just being able to do like Nth Doctor events where you just do a Doctor Who which suits whatever the story you're telling. And that might just puncture through. But this is the point. I think this is where we're all going. I think you can see it with the Marvel fatigue. And one of the biggest things with the Marvel fatigue at the moment, which I read, which I thought was bang on the point, is it feels like Doomsday is being set up to lead into their secret invasion or whatever. And we might have talked about this
Secret
before.
War.
Secret War. They've done Secret Invasion. Secret War. And that there's just no tech, there's no appetite for that left. There's no sense of like, I want to be strong. We might have talked about this. I can't remember if I've talked to you
Well,
about
the thing about a
what.
Secret War. Secret War was the one with the Beyonder, wasn't it? Who the
Probably.
hell gives a damn?
Well, this is it. You're trying to do which doc this, and this is to me, this is the most fascinating thing about where we are at the moment, because you're seeing professional media services struggling and just trying to co-opt previous strategies from a different landscape into a landscape where they don't work. So you can see it with Doomsday. Doomsday should have been a standalone 1 3-hour epic, and they should have sold it as being just a standalone. And then you get the buy-in. As soon as people feel that they're being pulled back into an end game approach, they're not interested. They don't want that. There's too much going on anymore. Sorry. People want standalone stuff. They're not, I don't think they're after that. If there's franchises, they don't want the franchises to be having momentum to keep them watching. They want the franchises to be something they can dip into where they want to within that franchise. And then you have to budget and work around your debt, what your expectations of audiences are accordingly. That I think is the way forward, and I think that's the way for Doctor Who. The thought of, quite frankly, the thought of like another series of Doctor Who where it's another 12 episodes. If we're lucky, over 12 weeks, where the doctor starts and there's a background story that's, chundering on while there's these individual episodes. The thought of it just bores me. I just like, just give me something that's Doctor Who, which gives me something on a weekend in October or November I can look forward to, watch it, and then I'll go and watch the other stuff. And you get my audience numbers, you can sell your DVDs, you don't make it too expensive so you don't overcost it. And you sit within a new market where we're just not, there's just not room for that sort of serialization at the moment.
I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. The Doctor Who thing, I mean, we said that for many times over the years, so it's probably not worth me repeating it after you just have. I noticed, however, on I wish I could find the link, and maybe I'll be able to find it for the show notes. There was something that came up in my inbox. I don't know whether it was on LinkedIn or through a Substack subscription or whatever, basically saying that Netflix has noticed a massive drop off with second series.
Second series, yeah.
Which is a big problem, isn't it, when you've got multiple series strategy.
Yeah, people just don't. I think, I mean, there's loads of factors with Netflix as well. Is that those, yeah, when we've always said this. I mean, this was something we were saying 10 years ago with Stephen Moffat when the show became very irregular as to when it was airing. Is this that you'll lose audiences if they're not kind of in the zone for when they're expecting it's not there, they will lose track and they'll go and watch something else. You need to have regularity. Content creators will tell you that. You know, online, you need to have regularity in your drops. Whenever you drop content, you need to keep it regular because people will work to that date. I, without giving them a shout out, at the moment, I've been quite enjoying the podcast, quite nicely called Reactica, which is Katie Sackhoff and Battlestar Galactica doing reactions with our husbands to episodes of Battlestar Galactica, which she's never watched before. Drops every Thursday. I know it's every Thursday, so I wait for Thursday. My sister's very big. She loves the Harry Hill podcast. Every Monday it drops. You know it. So you need to know when the things are in really busy saturated worlds. And yeah, you're right. I can't even remember where we started on this, but whatever it was, you were right and I was right.
I
So
agree. Yeah,
let's move on
absolutely.
from that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we mentioned Sebastian McCoy and him
Oh yeah.
being 80 plus and the notion of him being the doctor. And maybe there's scope for that to happen maybe once. I watched the first episode of Spider-Noir last night,
Oh, yeah.
and it occurred to me that Nicolas Cage is in his 60s and he's doing a lot of rolling around on the floor. And some of that is actually him on the floor because you can see him on the floor. I was thinking, firstly, he's aged quite well for Hollywood. He doesn't appear to have had too much surgery on the
Really?
face.
You
Not
think
too much,
he
not
can
too
barely move
much.
his face?
All right then, yeah. Well, I mean, this is the thing with it, isn't it? Because you don't know either way, do you? You don't really know.
Yeah, you
Probably you're
do.
right. All right, you're
Yeah,
probably
you
right.
do.
But
Here's the clue. When people are 60, no one looks like Nicolas Cage. So for Nicolas Cage not to look like he's 60, he's had work
yeah.
done. Now, I have no issue with that, to be clear. I'm not coming down him for it. I'm not taking any swings. But he's had work, and that's fine.
The
But I've
thing is, you say that my mum is nearly 80 and she's barely got a wrinkle. Everyone comments all the time, and she hasn't been in surgery, she hasn't got the money for it, and she doesn't even believe in it. And people regularly comment. But then again, she's probably looked after herself better than Nicolas Cage.
Or maybe she has surgery, and that's why she's got no
Hey, my
she's
mum has not had surgery.
Well, this is interesting because there is a real interesting conversation around cosmetics, isn't there? I mean, the way you reacted then as if it's a bad thing, and the way that actors react, I know you don't mean literally a bad thing, but the way actors act as if they've never had it and they are just naturally beautiful forever. And it bugs me. Because I think there needs to be a much more honesty around this. Because otherwise, we create, and I see it online all the time. These people just going, "Oh my God, you know, they look so amazing. You know, how do they look so great? It's like they've got surgery. You know, oh, Paul Rudd, he looks amazing. It's like, yeah, he's got
He's definitely had surgery.
lots of light blasted on him when you see him. He's had surgery. He's got either hair plugs or wig, and it's dyed. That's how he looks good. And if you do that." And also, you go through, you know, you have a quite good workout regime, which a lot of these actors have to do to stay in these roles. You would look good as well. It's not because they are superior creatures. I know we adore actors, so somehow we sort of elevate them and sort of almost expect them to be of godly status. And it's like, you know, how do they look so good? It's because it's surgery. I mean, you see the Korean market, it's brutal. I mean, you know, you know, in terms of the cosmetics they do there, but it's all very, as far as I'm aware, it's all very open. We need to be open about it. It's fine to do it, but let's not pretend that people don't do it. I think that's the problem. It's the deception of it, because then that
Yes.
creates unreasonable expectations of beauty, and that's a problem. So Sylvester McCoy.
Sylvester McCoy. Yeah. Well, no. I was basically referring to Sylvester McCoy to get us into talking about
Oh
Spider-Noir
yeah,
a little bit,
Spider-Man,
basically.
Nick Cage. Nick Cage. Yeah, I mean, in a weird way. I mean, any work that he has allegedly had done, I don't know whether he has. Maybe he is just naturally beautiful, full of hair, full of tight skin, and you know that's natural. That's absolutely fine. But
I
maybe
think
he.
there's something going on up top, definitely.
Who knows? I couldn't say. It's just speculation, but it worked. he looked good in the role, if you know what I mean. He looked, I
Yes.
mean, he's obviously
Well, he's a hangdog gumshoe, isn't he? It's perfect.
yes, yeah. And it just fit, whether it's a Bogart or a Stewart or an amalgamation or whatever he was playing, the look of him kind of fit the role. What's interesting about Spider-Noir, I find, is it again, it goes back to what we've just been talking about the idea of thinking about costing and what you're aware of you can do within your show. And Spider-Noir has actually very little spider in it. As far as, I mean, I've watched up to about episode four, I think, maybe five, and there's very little of that in there. It's predominantly Nicolas Cage playing a Bogarty character, which is fine. And I think that's, it kind of almost feels like back in the sort of 70s and 80s, where you'd have something like The Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby, where you'd have the Hulk only appear
For a few seconds,
three
yeah, for a few
times an
minutes,
episode, and then I think by season four they knocked it down to two times, and the rest of it was Bill Bixby, and it relied on Bill Bixby being charming enough to carry the show. And I feel that's where we are with Spider-Noir, and I would sort of say that's where they should be looking at doing the superhero genre is. And again, going back to things like Iron Man, Downey Jr. carried Iron Man rather than Iron Man. He was the one who made that film work, not the CG. So I think for this sort of genre, sort of looking at ways to sort of pull back on the crazy effects, because we've got to the point where we're so numb to crazy effects, they no longer draw people in. You need to be thinking about going back to character, because that is somewhere where you can draw people in. It's, we eventually become numb to the beauty and amazing things that you can do.
The other thing about Spider-Noir is I think it also, I mean, and it we can apply this to Doctor Who, because Spider-Noir, as with many other takes on Spider-Man, there are many takes on Doctor Who, and I think it isn't just the fact that it can that it shows us like a different take on Spider-Man and positions it where it does. It shows us that you can take a main character or a popular character and reinterpret them, which Doctor Who does already, but also put them in a completely different context, which Doctor Who
Yeah.
doesn't really do
No.
beyond
Yeah.
the format.
Yeah.
It doesn't recontextualize Doctor Who in terms of the setting, does it? It's like the motivation and the landing and the carrying on. But you could actually do something different with Doctor Who, strand the Doctor, which has been done many times in the novels, once on TV.
Yeah. And I think, well, we've talked about this before, but in a weird way, on this conversation, it's just so funny when you think back to. I'm trying to think what would be the best era to say. Well, let's say season, just because we've been talking about McCoy, season 26. You're in a position there where you have four stories which don't connect. There's no continuity, there's no arc. You're watching four separate stories, which we know they're connected because we know that there's Ace and the Doctor going around the universe, but it could be Ace and the Doctor from four different timelines, and we wouldn't know. Because there's no connection. It's like, well, that's where I would do Doctor Who. You're just doing stories. You're not trying to connect. Yeah, that seems to be the almost simple level. But yeah, you're right. You could do stuff. Again, this is where I think stuff is interesting. I know we've said this now like weeks in a row. James Bond, do one in the 60s. James Bond, do one in the
Yes, please
70s.
do one in the 60s.
You could do a Doctor Who, which is an episode story dump, and the production team do it using 1970s technology. So you actually do a very sort of studio based,
Oh, well, yeah.
and just for the aesthetic sense, and something, again, something event, something to tell people, look, this is different. And that could be interesting. You could do one in black and white. And see what that's like. You can, you do. There's just so many ways you could play with this. You could do one which is, is a oneer, a bit like Adolescence, but not. You know what I mean? Which gives that sense that it's just like a one-shot thing. There's just so many ways you could play, and that could be really interesting for Doctor Who. And I'm surprised they've not done that in its latest iteration. Yeah, going from the TARDIS out the TARDIS into the thing, doing the thing. I mean, it'd be a hard one to do. But these, yeah, you're right. I think that's where I would see the future of Doctor Who and the future of most franchise content is being more fun and less about continuity.
There has been a lot of, and we have covered this before, but I do think it fits into this conversation. There has been a lot of criticism at the time, excuse me, criticism at the time and since concerning Chris Chibnall's stewardship of Doctor Who, but he was trying to do things differently. And while maybe the companion mix didn't pull off, certainly for the first set of companions, in terms of a different pace and slightly longer episodes, and then doing the Flux thing. He clearly, and obviously coming from the big show that he had, Broadchurch on ITV, he clearly knew the television drama and storytelling had evolved into a new kind of shape and form. It's nearly 10 years ago since we were looking at Chibnall's Doctor Who, and I know you said before it's almost like when RTD came back in, it has kind of reverted to what it was before that, and maybe that's because the BBC wanted it that way for the 60s or whatever. But it does feel like there's, it didn't get the right credit. Maybe the execution wasn't perfect, but also a missed opportunity really to reshape things after that.
I think in fairness to Russell T Davies, I think he did reshape quite significantly. I mean, we've got it's easy to forget, but with the Whoniverse came with the attack on, relooking at old material, the Tales of the TARDIS. The show itself kind of evolved slightly, but I think, like with Chibnall, and I totally agree with you, both eras tried to do some shifts. I think you're right. Davis is, in terms of the actual tone and the actual series content, did less because I think he was trying to capitalize off his previous success in 2005, which I think is what the BBC wanted as well. Because going back to what we were saying earlier, we're seeing institutions and productions which are still trying to find the success of 20 years ago, which does no longer exist in today's market. So I think that was a mistake for him. But you're right. I think that was my feeling with Chibnall. When I first watched it, I was thinking, this is someone who is really trying to change the gears here and do something different. You could tell from the sound of the score, the title sequence. Everything felt like it was trying to, as we said at the time, to me, it felt like it was like he was trying to reinvent the 60s. There was sort of almost like a 60s sense to it. But again, he still couldn't get away from that same problem that he had to have a new set of companions who were all contemporary. They came, but go back and back to their home, back out into space, back to Sheffield. And it was these sort of staples you just didn't need. If he could have just pulled that a little further away, like he did with Flux, and try to, yeah, it was close, but it wasn't right. But I think the markets are going to start pushing content into a direction which is right, which I think is going to be the way that we're suggesting, not because I think we're right, but because it just seems to be the way things are scoring. Look at Odyssey scoring well. The only outlier to this is Spider-Man. Spider-Man seems to continually rake potentially, well, we don't know yet, but will probably be a good box office.
Based on the trailer views, yeah.
Yeah, it is very much a franchise with almost quite a serial continuity to its films. So that is the unusual outlier. But by
Yes.
and large, you look at DC, Clayface, again, the trailer, people are really happy with the trailer, but ultimately a standalone. I think people are invested in the standalone. If it was like the Clayface franchise and it's going to be a series of four films and this is the first, I think people would be backing off. But like a standalone sort of comic horror slash hybrid, people are on board for that. And again, it's an event because you don't tend to have that in the comic franchises.
Yeah. With Doctor Who, I do wonder, and I have had this concern basically since it was clear that there wasn't going to be any new Doctor Who anytime soon, as it were. Because, it was last episode was last year, and then we had the thing that no one talks about. The gap we had between 19, you can say 1989 or 1996 and 2005 afforded a reset that applied almost to everyone. The Doctor Who wasn't in the consciousness. The format of Doctor Who wasn't in the consciousness. And it was a fresh opportunity, which is a period of time that we haven't had since. And there isn't, probably isn't going to be this time around as well. So I do wonder if they are going to find themselves struggling to really distance them. If they come into it and say, we want to do it this way now instead of that way. And I think they're going to struggle to make a significant difference in the way that that Chibnall did, really, because there isn't that distance, that sort of like green space or whatever you want to call it between what's just finished and what's going to come next.
I
There's
don't
going to be
know.
expectations.
Yeah, I think expectations. I mean, it's so funny in a weird way that, entertainment and politics are running in similar situations of trying to find ways to break a sense of repetition or consumer apathy in a weird way. We can see it currently in the UK at the moment. We can see latest one trying different ways to sort of break from the cycle. And I think content is at the moment as well having to be starting to think about how do we break from the cycle? Because, and I think this year will be quite a telling one. I think this year might be a year where Hollywood and television will have to shift. If Doomsday doesn't do what they're hoping it to do, that should be it's the final sort of punch in the face, which says we've got to kind of rethink about how we deliver. I don't agree with people who sort of say it's because we want new material, we don't want to see old stuff anymore. Absolutely wrong. If that was the case, we wouldn't be getting old stuff. It's because people don't go and see new material. And as we've said before, outlets don't report on new material like they'll report on old material. That's why you keep getting the franchises and reboots and everything. It's because you're going down well, watch it, but you won't go and watch the new thing. People don't. They say they will, but they don't very rarely. So that's why I don't think that's going to change. But like we say, how you deliver it, how you try and demonstrate, or how you try and find a way to twist the formula, I think that's, as I say, both in politics and in entertainment, we're seeing that need because our society has changed, and yet these long establishments of production or politics are so rigid, they're too inflexible to see it, I don't think, or able to adapt to it. But I think they will have to. So I think when Doctor Who does come back, I think if they've got the right people on board, they would be crazy not to see that they can't do what they've done before. If it was me, I would probably think about, and again, not a producer, so I could be wrong. Maybe I would start off by not doing a series. I would start off by doing three one shots in a year and just seeing what lands, what doesn't, and then think about where it goes from there. I think the mistake would be for them to go straight back into doing another series. And then, as you say, then I feel like you could feel that there's just not enough time to reflect on the market, on consumer interests, to actually find what Doctor Who should be.
The problem with that, I'm thinking maybe unless you've got some sort of different distribution deal, or you've got people on board for that, the BBC isn't going to do that. The BBC isn't experimental in terms of prime time viewing. It hasn't been for years. It's not really doing anything that's particularly out there. It won't commission sitcoms, for example. It's got two studio sitcoms, and they've both been going for over 10 years. Doesn't commission new ones. It's addicted to flogging the dead horse of EastEnders. Which probably needs putting out to pasture and replacing with something else. But I feel that it's very averse to risk, and I think there's very various reasons for that in terms of the license fee and politically as well. So I can understand why, but it does when you've got opportunity when you've got avenues like BBC Two, which used to be the place for risk, or BBC Three and BBC Four, which used to be the places for risk, and then you've got BBC iPlayer, which could be a place for risk, but isn't really. It does baffle me that they don't really take advantage of that. By the way, I just saw BBC iPlayer doesn't stop non-license fee payers from using it. I didn't know this. This is crazy.
No, they're talking about that changing, aren't they?
But the fact
Yeah.
that it's like, what?
It's yeah. But I think with Doctor Who, its format itself has always been sort of slightly avant-garde to the rest, to what Yeah,
That's how
sure.
it's
Yeah.
existed. So I think if they are looking at something to try and do something different, it's a show you can get away with doing that more than maybe other shows. And I'm not saying they should do anything massively, but I would sort of say like a 90 minute or 80 minute, no, let's go 90 minute one-off, which you sell and you push and do that as an event thing. See how that works, see how that lands, move on to the next, you know, or if you plan to just say do 3 in a year and see if that works better, whether that sells well. I don't know. Again, I don't, it's such a confusing market. I'm not in the market, so I can't, I'm No, sure.
cautious about backseat driving here. It might be just simply that the only way, you know, that there's just still globally, you know, an eight episode series will sell better globally than if you did do three standalones and you just take, you might get lower ratings for the eight standalones, but like a series, but that would sell better, distribute better globally than trying to sell three.
Well, I
I
mean, you
don't
say that,
know.
but I'm immediately reminded once again of Midsummer Murders, which has this ridiculous reputation in Northern Europe and has huge ratings and a following. It goes out first on an American channel, even though it's recorded, it's filmed and produced in the UK or co-produced in the UK. But the UK viewers don't get to see it until 18 months or 2 years after the episodes have gone out in the USA. And they do good figures. So. And that's a similar format of like
But
three or
that,
four episodes per year.
yeah. Well, this is what I mean. So the format of like the series. I mean, going back to Netflix and with its 30% drop between series one and series two, and they're talking about or any series, and they were talking about like One Piece, which did very well, and I think did pretty well in its second series, but they were still saw a 30% drop. So, you know, in a sense, the series package is looking less tasty
Well, the other
if.
thing about, can I just interrupt? Because One Piece is something that my kids were watching, my two oldest, when the first series came along. And because there's such a gap, they feel like it's a completely different show now. They've aged.
Well, this is the problem I think with series for Netflix, and part of the reason why they see the drop is that they can't do them as series used to be, and they used to be like this because it's the way it works. You need to have a regular rollover. This goes back to the point which I totally forgot about why I was making that point. You need to have the regular time slots, you need to have the regular dates, you need to know that it's coming. And if you don't, then you lose. And they're right. I've come back to stuff and I'm going like, no, I just don't remember it. Don't remember it well enough. I'm done. I'll go and do
We were like
something
that with
else.
Man in the High Castle. We've never finished it.
And it was what happens. I mean, One Piece is fairly easy to be fair, but well, maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe because I've now watched 900 episodes of the animation series, so maybe it's easy for me to sort of say it's obvious, isn't it? But yeah, you're right. The distances between the series, Wednesday struggled as well for the same reason, and it saw a drop in its season two.
And of course, we're in our 50s. We're middle-aged people, so that period of time between TV shows, say 2 or 3 years, that's a bit of a fraction. But when you're 15 or 16, that's like a quarter of your life, or a fifth of your life between series, and that's not good for a young audience, is it? That's not good for keeping a young audience, I should say.
Oh, it's not good for us. You know, our time is limited. Our time is getting more and more limited.
And
You know, the
that, yeah.
amount of series of a show we want to see are becoming less, well, is reduced by the longer it takes between series to actually air them. So yeah, you're right. It doesn't work. And again, to me, it just screams that if you're going to do franchises, you need to be pulling away from doing the serialization, the continuity, and you make. So if you do one every 2 years, if that's the way the model works, okay, even if you have to do a series every 2 years, those series totally stand alone. They don't link to the previous, because I think that's the only way. Again, with Netflix, I still think Netflix should be doing limited series, more limited series, just six episodes, eight episodes, that's it, done. It sits in their library, so people will recommend it, they can watch it. As we've said before, if you've got a series which just gets cancelled halfway through because it's just not making the numbers or doesn't make the series two, no one's going to watch it. It's just dead resources in your library. So you've got to find a way of just making things more self-contained. Because the weird thing is, if television is becoming a library, which it is, we own less, we rent more. Like a library, you go and you pick something off the shelf. You expect that the back end of the book is there and it's not missing. And it's just so weird that Netflix is a library where you pick something off the shelf and you've got to check to see if the last few pages are there or not. So if you want to be a library, you've got to finish your material to mean that people want to pick that thing up and off the shelf again. To me, it's just, that's just, it's not rocket science. Does Doctor Who work in that thing? Well, as we've said before, Billy Piper could be a good back bookend, the back end of that. Or again, does it demand a proper finish? Red Dwarf demands a finish, doesn't it? That bugs me. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, what do you, how do you finish that show?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Do you really need to finish? Do they need to be complete? If I mean, if it's I mean, something like Doctor Who is just like an endless anthology, essentially. Whereas, something that starts off with a premise and an aim and a someone
Red
definitely wanting to
Dwarf.
go somewhere. All right, Red Dwarf wanting to get back home, but even though that's not actually possible. For Dave Lister, is it? He can't
Well,
really get back home, can he?
he can get to a home, can't he? I mean,
He
he's
can get
continually
to.
on tra in transit. I think it's a show which, to me, because as you say, it's a concept which begins with a premise, which deploys a suggestion of an ending, of an outcome. You need to eventually, you should give it an outcome and then bookend it. That's how I would do it. And then it sort of exists. I think shows where they just kind of dribble and die off is
Actually,
where it's a shame.
I quite like the idea of the end of Red Dwarf being basically Dave turning up at a convention last weekend and everyone being really pissed off, and then him leaving early to go and do a funk show or something somewhere, which is apparently what happened at an official Red Dwarf convention last weekend. All of them were late to the stage, and then. Craig Charles left early.
I mean, yeah, you could do something which is vaguely
Because they've
postmodern.
already done that, haven't they? They've already kind
What the
of
better,
done.
yeah.
Yeah, so maybe finish it that way. Maybe that was the end.
I don't know. I just think some things are, they don't have to be like a proper, book totally closed end, but it feels like, okay, that now is something I can move on from. And I think it's a shame with something like Red Dwarf, where I feel like it probably could do with something. It might not be the best, but it could do with something. I always thought at the end of Series 6, when you have Starbug versus Starbug and then it's destroyed, and then there was a massive gap of like 18 months, 2 years. It felt like ages at the time. Nowadays, it would be like a norm, that'd be a short time. I felt almost at that time, I thought, well, maybe that could be the end of Red Dwarf in a weird way. I think sometimes, the shock endings, the Blake Seven endings are the way to go. That's how you become immortalized. If you fade away, you don't get remembered.
I think if you're playing for laughs, then it's very difficult to have a shock that lasts. I think that's the problem with comedy. There's very, I mean, it's completely different. If you take the last episode of The Good Life, because that's a very down pat episode. There's like a burglary, and then Tom decides to go back to work, and the whole thing has been essentially a waste of time. Which is a very clever ending, but it's also a very sad ending, and I suppose maybe it tells you something about the lifestyle and whether it's achievable or not, and tells you a few things about society as well. It's not very funny, though.
No, I'm not sure what are the best comedy endings. I mean, again, the young ones, the bus blowing up was. Again, the thing with the Young Ones format, you could imagine there would be a following week and they'd be back in the same house. And, it was irrelevant like that, wasn't it? There was an irrelevancy to it. But yeah, it's hard to think of like sitcoms which have had good endings. I mean, you're right, they are very hard to do for sitcoms.
I mean, there's Blackadder, isn't there, where everyone dies every time. Nearly everyone dies every time.
Always felt a bit lazy, that to me. I like the third for its sort of alternate take. That felt, and the fourth, I felt, yeah, you couldn't go any other way with it. The second felt like a very lazy ending back end to it. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. What sitcoms work with endings, as you say, when they're there for comedy. But and you're right, some sitcoms are quite nice where they don't. The Golden Girls would have been very nice if they'd not done the Golden Palace and just had them in the same house, and you know that becomes, you just off into the sunset sort of thing. I think that is fine. But I think, as you say, when you've got a premise that it sets out with, which isn't completed, that's when I think you feel like with Red Dwarf, maybe we need an end, or we need some sort of acknowledgement that it's not going to end, that then that he's not going to get to that place and he's fine with it. Or
So I suppose the inevitable next step of this conversation is to throw it open to the listener and the viewer and ask you, how would you end Doctor Who? Which is, this is completely, this isn't where we started the podcast from, and I don't think either of us expected to get here. But really, I mean, it's an interesting premise. How would you end Doctor Who? If you had to end Doctor Who, how would you do it? And it doesn't have, it does have to be a final end, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't get resurrected a few years later, or in it, a final end for Doctor Who in the sense of a comic book final end of Spider-Man, who then is resurrected as Miles Morales, or some alternate universe of Peter Parker or Spider-Noir back in the past, or the medieval one, or whatever. But how would you end Doctor Who? I think that is an interesting question, and whether it has a good answer or not, I don't know. So let's find out.
I know how I'd end it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Oh, don't give the side eye look. What was that for? So, I mean, again, there's different sort of ends you can do to storytelling. To me, the way I would do Doctor Who for something like that, where I think the whole notion of Doctor Who is that the universe always needs the Doctor. That's kind of its staple, that that's the universe without the Doctor barely worth thinking about, or whatever Ainley's master says before his little chortle. I would do a baton passing. That's how I would end it. I'd have, I suppose, in a weird way, they actually have done it in the Russell T. Davis one with Tennant to Gatwa, the baton passing. But that's how I think I would do it. I would sort of almost suggest the police box is the constant. And for the reason whether the doctor ends up dying or whether the doctor ends up literally passing on, I'd probably have dying, and then the role is passed on, the name is passed on to someone else, which is not new. Batman's done it, they've all done it in some ways. But to me, if I was to end the show, I think that would feel like the most natural ending for it, because I can't imagine a world where the doctor would stay still. I know that the Tennant regeneration with Gatwa suggests he would. I can't imagine it. He just doesn't seem to be the sort. So I think you'd either have to have off into the sunset ending, or a pass the baton on ending where he passes but the legacy continues. That would be the way I would probably do it, but that's just me.
Okay. Well, as I say, I'm interested to hear what our listeners and audience on YouTube and everywhere else think. So do let us know. Leave us a comment below, or get in touch through Patreon, or through however you receive this, and email podcasterbus@gmail.com. Those are all your options. We'll be back with a new chat soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.